States. She's also a candidate for California's 30th Congressional District. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kolhatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Kitsap. Like us on Facebook.com/RUWithSonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on Twitter.com/RUWithSonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Lady Sings the Blues, a tribute to Billie Holiday 2023. On Saturday, April 8th, from 8 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. The 16th annual Billie Holiday Tribute brings together musicians of many genres to pay tribute to influential jazz singer and songwriter Billie Holiday. Performances feature Marsha Hocker, LaRonda Steele, Arietta Ward, and more. Again, that's the 16th annual Billie Holiday Tribute Night, Lady Sings the Blues, on Saturday, April 8th, from 8 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on K-B-O-O
Portland.
Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward, and you people are tuned in with us again to Civic Cypher.
Indeed you are. Lots to stick around for today. As you know, it has been a sad week. Another mass shooting event, another school shooting event. And we are going to definitely take some time to examine that. We're going to ask a few questions that we hope to leave you with so that, you know, we all can do some soul searching and find the answers that are appropriate for us to move forward. And one of the things we're not going to do is pretend like this hasn't happened before, and it'd be hard for us to pretend like it won't happen again. So we are going to respect your intelligence in asking these questions, but indeed we feel it's necessary to break down kind of where we are with this country, and we have to come to terms with some things that, you know, we do on this show consistently and give credit where it's due. That partly comes from Q wanting us to make sure that we acknowledge, you know, heroism when we actually saw it, and everything else. So a lot to stick around for insofar as that's concerned. We're also going to be discussing our Way Black History Fact as a former slave who actually arrested a sitting president once upon a time. So for those folks out there thinking that what is happening to our former president, that being unprecedented, We got news for you today in the Way Black History Fact. That and so much more to stick around for. But first and foremost, this is Q's favorite part of the show. We call it Ebony Excellence. So how you feel about getting some Ebony Excellence, Q?
Shall we?
I think we shall. So today's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Hip Hop Weekly Media, and we're reading from blackenterprise.com. The title of this one, A New Orleans Teen Makes Impressive Mathematical Discovery, or rather New Orleans Teens. So I'll read this. The ingenuity of children has always been inspiring. New Orleans teenagers Kalsia Johnson and Nikaya Jackson. Ingenuity enabled them to figure out a mathematical equation that had seemingly been impossible. According to 4WWL, Johnson and Jackson demonstrated that Pythagoras' theorem can be proven with trigonometry. The high school students presented their findings at the American Mathematical Society's annual Southeastern Conference. This is a quote. It's really an unparalleled feeling, honestly, because there's just nothing like being able to do something that people don't think young people can do, Johnson told 4WWL. She goes on to say, a lot of times you see this stuff, but you don't see kids like us doing it. 4WWL reported that mathematicians have tried to prove Pythagoras' theorem can be proven with trigonometry for 2,000 years. This is a lot of stuff to say. I'm not going to pretend like I know what any of this stuff means. But these kids do. These little black girls. This is black girl ebony, black girl excellence, black girl magic in the highest order. They've been trying to prove this using trigonometry for 2,000 years. And a teacher challenged them to prove the theory. The Griot reports that Johnson and Jackson's abstract adds that the book with the largest known collections of proofs for the theorem, Alicia Loomis's The Pythagorean Proposition, flatly states there are no trigonometric proofs because all the fundamental formulae of trigonometry are themselves based upon the truth of the Pythagorean theorem. So they broke mathematics for the better, and we as human beings are a little bit further along. So that's your Ebony Excellence for the day. Now, the Nashville shooting. This is the 130th mass shooting event of 2023. 130 of them have happened. And I, you know, if you're online on social media, you probably come across the same statistics that I do, that other countries don't have mass shootings because they've taken steps and they've, you know, organized their guns, their firearms, and so forth and so on. I remember mentioning that the United States has the most private firearms in our personal arsenal, arsenals, I should say, than the next like 10 countries combined. And we're the third largest country, and number two and number three on the list are China and India, which are the number one and number two largest countries in the world. And then it goes on to include like, you know, Pakistan and Great Britain and all the other countries on the list. And we have more than all of them put together. And that we do have a gun problem.
Wow.
Yeah. You remember that? I remember sending that to you.
How many shootings have we had this year, Ramsey?
130 mass shooting events.
You know, there haven't been 130 days this year yet.
Yeah.
There hasn't been 100 days this year yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. There hasn't been 90 days this year yet.
All true. And again, all things that people come across on your social media. So, you know, the one thing we don't want to do is insult your intelligence. We know that this is a tragic thing, and, you know, we don't like to deal with tragedy, but unfortunately that's the nature of the show. Obviously we deal with issues that affect, you know, black and brown communities primarily and marginalized peoples in this country. And as a result, we often deal with a lot of police issues. And so today, the reason we're talking about this is because we had a lot to say about the nature of police, the purpose of police, especially after the Uvalde school shooting. We were very critical of the police's response at that time. And on this show, we have been critical of a lot of police responses. You know, again, we do our best to advocate for Black and brown people, Black and brown bodies, Black and brown communities, and marginalized communities in this country. And so being critical of the way policing is done is kind of part and parcel for what we do here. However, when police actually do something that goes against, you know, let's be fair, goes against human instinct, running toward the danger. when police do things that we would consider above and beyond the scope of what the normal duty is and could be considered a heroic action, and police end up, you know, who's to say what, how the outcome would have been different. But if we're being generous here, we'll say if police indeed save lives as a result of their actions, then we have to acknowledge that.
Yeah. And I also think, Ramses, that you said above and beyond.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they're supposed to do.
Okay. Yeah. That's it. Okay. I just wanted to go back to that. I don't think that them being heroic is above and beyond, because that's kind of what you sign up for.
Yeah.
To go toward the danger in the name of protecting and serving the public.
Right.
For those that actually do that, it should be considered heroic. It should. But it shouldn't be considered above and beyond, because that should be the expectation if you signed up and applied and tested and trained for that job. It's not like the military once upon a time where there was a draft.
Yeah.
Well, you're drafted into the civic duty of being a police officer, and then whether or not you're brave is kind of a lottery shot.
Yeah.
For most police agencies in this country, you voluntarily sign up for that gig with all that comes with it. So it should not be beyond scope or beyond expectation for you to do this heroic job that you applied for.
I think that, you know, one of the things that I think what I was trying to suggest in that moment is that police are allowed to be human beings. And I want to couple that expectation with police are supposed to represent the best of us, right? And so, if police are allowed to be human beings, then going against that very nature, that instinct that says, if I go here, I'm going to be harmed, hurt, shot, die.
Or I could be, rather.
Could be, sure. But going against that requires courage, that a level of courage that most people may never face,
mm-hmm.
may never even face. And so that's what I was trying to acknowledge. So maybe hero is not the right word, but no. I certainly want to acknowledge.
I think hero is the right word.
Okay.
Cool. I just don't think it should be framed as above and beyond.
Okay.
That's the job you signed up for.
Fair point.
You know, even if it is against your normal instinct, but I think that's the point. That's why it's also heroic.
Mm-hmm.
It's what the job calls for, but to sign up for that job and then do that job should be heroic.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we kind of on this show argue against police officers being called heroes is because
they don't do anything.
They're not
heroic.
Doing the heroic thing.
They just get called.
They're
that.
Doing the people thing.
Sure.
And that's fair that you're behaving the way that a human being normally would in these circumstances, right. But that isn't what you signed up for. That's why when we're scared and when we're in danger, we call you.
Mm.
Hey, hero people, can you come do some hero stuff over here? Because we're terrified.
Yeah.
So,
and y'all got the guns.
Yeah. So I think what you said is fair. I think using the word hero in that instance is fair.
Okay, good. Why are we talking about this in the first place? Well, I'll let you take the floor here because you sent over a video for this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to talk the people through it and talk me through it, because I didn't actually watch the video. For you listening, as you may or may not know, on this show, we take turns when it comes to reviewing videos where violence is displayed. And so, so you talk to people through what the video was about.
The thing that I think we do here kind of masterfully is that we paint a picture with strokes that don't require us to use pencils, but wide brushed paint brushes. Mm-hmm. The specifics of this video that need to be pointed out is that it is a video from the vantage point of a police officer, mm-hmm. from a body cam, of the officer speeding toward the danger and proactively, with urgency, with haste, making the I need to go and try to save and or protect and or apprehend and or stop the people that I need to protect and the person that's putting them in danger, in that order. And there's no other way to translate this video. Like, even if you are somebody who's made your career or your life on the stance that police are by nature awful, which is not what we do, but even if you did, if you watch this video and that's your stance on this officer, then something's wrong with you.
You out of pocket for that.
Right? Every decision made in this video, and I think we can make it available on our social media mm-hmm. for you guys to watch it, is of an officer who's determined when he left the house that day that if he were put in this, or probably long before he left the house that day, mm-hmm. that if he were ever put into this position, maybe it was when the Uvalde shooting happened. Maybe that was the day he said, not on my watch. Mm-hmm. But whenever that decision happened, it was before this day because he was ready. And from the car speeding toward the scene, to this person getting out of their vehicle and, like I said, in post haste, moving toward danger, it was clear that this officer's dedication to the job, dedication to the public that they served, was real, was authentic, was brave, was heroic, was all the things that when children say they want to be police officers when they grow up, this is what they're thinking, far before they know to be afraid. Far before they know the mortality of human beings, and that by simply signing up for this job that you might not make it home every day, right? That very, very heroic, very, very idealistic image of law enforcement and policing that children have when they make that, this is what I want to do when I grow up statement. This person grew up into that person. Mm. And I'll find out the officer's name. Ramses, remind me so that we can say that officer's name either today or the next time we record.
It's Officer Michael Colazzo.
Hero.
Or Colazzo. Michael Colazzo.
Michael Colazzo, comma, hero. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm saying I don't have a problem using that word at all. Mm-hmm. It just sadly doesn't always apply.
There, and that's...
And in this career choice, it should. Yeah. That should be the expectation. Yeah. The expectation for the pilot flying my plane is that he'll take it off and land it safely. That's the expectation. Mm-hmm. We don't stand up and cheer like we should because it's quite miraculous. But the reason that we don't is because it's a pilot. If I flew a plane and landed it, people would jump for joy. Oh my sure. God, the guy who 24C got up and landed the plane.
Yeah.
When the pilot does it because that's the job that they trained and signed up for, the expectation is that they will execute that job almost with perfection.
Yeah.
Because not doing it with perfection could result in all of us losing our lives. And that is our point, people. That is the point we try to make every time you hear us being hypercritical of police. The job that you signed up for does not come with the margin of error that would allow you to kill us or allow us to be killed while you're there hiding and protecting yourself. So I don't mind at all, my brother, my teammate, calling officers who act heroic, even if it is just doing the basics of the job heroic, mm-hmm. because like he said, it is against human nature to run towards the fire. It is against human nature to not cover up and duck for cover and hide behind shelter and protect yourself. However, the reason that you get paid, the reason that you're trained, and the reason why you're armed is so that when these situations arise, you protect and serve private citizens who do not have your training or your ammunition or your backup, not so that you kill them when they call you for help because they're having mental breakdowns or because they were driving too fast or because they ran the light or because their tail light's out or all these benign reasons that should not conclude a person's life. And even if I said the most serious of crimes in that list that I just said, those people ending up dead at the end of their interaction with you should not be the case.
Sure, sure. You know, there's so there's this video that I saw recently, just so that we have we're able to kind of make the establish the contrast. I was looking at a video the other day online, and this looked like it was a Hispanic man in California, younger looking guy, and driving some sort of sports car, got pulled over somewhere in California for having tint being too dark. Had all his paperwork in order, he was leaving the gym, everything was fine. And he's recording the police interaction. So the police come up to the car and they say, "Hey, your tint's too dark." And he says, "Yes, I am aware of that. I was pulled over recently and I got, it's called a fix-it ticket, meaning like I get like 30 days to fix it or something like that. I'm still within the 30 days, so I'm going to get it taken care of." And the officer just kind of goes through the routine. "Okay, you have anything in the car, blah, 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 anything I need to know about?" And he says, and by now in the film, he's got a backup officer there, right? Hispanic male. So when the officer asks, he says, "You know, yes, I do have a gun in the trunk of my car," or something like that, a Smith & Wesson or something like that, gun in my car. Smith & Wesson, in case you don't know, is like a company that makes guns. So he says, "Yeah, I have a gun with me, you know, and it's in the trunk of the car." At least I believe, I'm doing this from memory here. So then the second officer was a woman. She says, she puts her hand on her gun, right? She's like, "Oh, well, listen, I'm going to need to get you out of the car." And he's like, whoa, what do I need to get out of the car for? The tent is getting fixed. It's to fix the ticket. I'm fine. I'm a law abiding citizen. You asked if I have a gun. I have a gun in the car. That's fine. I'm not doing anything wrong." And then all of a sudden, both of the officers are like, "You know, well, why are you being combative?" And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then the backup officer, the female officer, pulls her gun out and points it at the guy as he's in the car. And he's like, whoa, what are you doing? You know what I mean? So, of course, there's going to be no issues with her pulling a gun on this guy. There's, you know, she's not going to get reprimanded or anything like that because she was afraid. So the contrast, and that'll be the excuse, the contrast between bravery, which I think is a precursor to heroism, or what we would call a hero, it needs to be applauded. And that's what we're doing today, because we see far too many examples of police doing what we would consider to be cowardly things and then hiding behind the fact that they were scared for their life, when indeed there is no threat. And we see this often after the fact. There was no threat. He didn't actually have a gun. He had a cell phone, or, you know, whatever the story is, right? And so in moments like this, it's important to applaud the actions of the people that do the job right, so that everyone else knows what our expectation is. Mm. And once we have that kind of gold standard established, then we can start kind of working back from there to suggest, okay, well, this is working and this is not working. If you're constantly becoming afraid as you're doing your job, and somehow that fear is costing people their lives, then we need to reassess your value in this capacity.
Rams, I think you suggested something once upon a time that was brilliant, and please forgive me if I destroy this in the way that you said it, but I think you'll get what I thought you meant. The officer in that video, officers like that officer should be who we call when something like this happens. Hey, there's a person here shooting people, and those officers should rush to that scene with their rifles and their tanks and all that tactical gear, mm-hmm. to handle stuff like that.
Right.
That same person should not pull me over for doing 75 and a 55. And I think Rams has communicated that before. Like, we're not saying that there shouldn't be people who come and stop mass shooters when they show up.
Yeah.
We are saying those same people should not be giving me a speeding ticket.
Yeah.
With their gun out.
Yeah. Exactly.
that doesn't make any sense.
It
shouldn't have ever made any sense.
And I think the point you're making, the point that I was making at the time was, it's very strange when you stop and think about it, that for the vast majority of calls to the police department, they do not require an individual to show up with a murder weapon on their hip. It's just not something that's necessary. Most of the calls that are like welfare checks or, you know, traffic stops, routine traffic stops, things like that, they don't require a weapon a tool that's only used is to end a life. And the narrative that has been chronicled in this country, deeply ingrained in our psyche, is that, well, what if something bad happens to the officers? We need to protect officer lives at all costs, even at the expense of the general public. And because oftentimes the general public that is being affected by these officers and their guns, those individuals are Black and brown. It's like, you know, as a population, as a total, you know, as a country, everybody's surprisingly okay with that. Well, they're just kind of shooting Black people, brown people. You know what I mean? It's kind of the same. It's the same energy. Because
those people are by nature criminal and most likely to do harm. So, of course,
they were scared. Isn't that weird?
Of course they were scared. They were on Crenshaw, Ramses.
So, watch this. I'm going to show you the hypocrisy here. Dave Chappelle pointed this out. Once upon a time, drugs ravaged the Black community in this country. Ghettos all across the country. Drugs. Crack babies, all kind of stuff. You know, people dying from overdoses, this and that and the third. And no one cared. They criminalized drugs rather than treating it like a health issue. They threw everybody in jail and just turned a blind eye to the rest of it. Let the animals wipe themselves out. And then fast forward 25 years, something like that, 30 years, drugs ravaged the white community. Fentanyl, right? Drugs, same
still,
thing.
Still ravishing.
Same thing, right? And now there's programs. People care deeply. We have to fix it. We have to change this. It's not, you'll never see people in jail for fentanyl. Not serving them football numbers like, you know, if you were
and not the users of the drug, right? People being right. caught selling this stuff in mass are being prosecuted.
Sure. Yeah. Of
but
course.
The people who are victims
yeah.
using this drug and putting their lives at risk are being treated like they're sick.
That's an excellent
and like
point.
They should be protected and
like they have
care
value
of.
As a human being. And again, that's an excellent point. So we're face to face with the duality that exists in this country. So we'll talk more about it in a second.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
For those of you just tuning in to Civic Sector, I'm your host, Ramses Jha.
He is Ramses Jha, and I am still mentally exhausted.
Sorry.
Emotionally taxed. And you know, Q Ward, for those who care whose voice this is, man, to segue from our lives into our topics for our show is a really heavy lift, man.
Sure.
Right. Even starting on a lighter note, you know, Ramses and I have conversations about our show and about what we need to do before we start it. And just transitioning from saying hello to you guys to what we have to talk to you about. It's a lot, man.
It's a lot. And we are definitely going to keep talking about it. So stay tuned. We got more to come from our digest version of the Nashville shooting and so much more. But first and foremost, let's talk about becoming a better ally. B-A-B-A. So today's Baba is sponsored by Major Threads for the finest in men's athletic wear. Check majorthreads.com. And I'm going to do a little bit of reading from truthout.org. Today, we're going to give a shout out to somebody who's playing for the home team here. Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs recently vetoed a Republican-backed education bill that would ban public K-12 schools from teaching critical race theory to students. Republicans have tried three times so far. In other words, she is not allowing the schools in Arizona to have books taken off of their shelves just because the authors are Black or just because it highlights the accomplishments, the achievements, or the history of Black, brown, marginalized peoples in this country. That is an ally, and that is how you use your power to stand in allyship with people who might need your support. So definitely shouting her out for that. And for those that don't know, CRT is a legal academic discipline that began in the 1980s, and it's a advanced college level study. It's not elementary school stuff. That's called American history. But
yeah, they're using that as code branding.
Exactly. That's what I was going to read. Encourage
people who are afraid of this thing they created.
Yeah. And in fact, that was what it says. In 2020, the far right co-opted the term CRT, weaponizing it as a boogeyman in the latest culture war pushed by Republicans. And currently more than 18 states have enacted policies targeting CRT, according to Education Week. Most notoriously in 2022, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed the Stop Woke Act, which prohibited educators from teaching lessons on race or LGBTQ issues. All right, back to Nashville. So we have a few questions, as promised. Before we get to the questions, let me paint a picture. This paints a picture quite well. Someone asked early on, when the details were still coming out, did the shooter act alone, right? And I saw a response online that I want to share with you. I think you'll love it. The shooter did not act alone. The shooter was aided by the NRA and 49 Republican senators.
That is a fact.
Now, there are people who will say that the Republican senators have tried to do this or that or the other thing. Most notably, Republicans wanted to put more police officers in schools, right? Put together a bill that puts more police officers in schools.
And more guns in the hands of citizens.
There you go.
And teachers.
A few things, but you know, that absolutely is one of them too. But the one that there was a lot of opposition to from the Democratic side of things is that we've seen that police in schools often has a negative impact on Black and brown students. They're often arrested and punished and criminalized, and it just fortifies the school to prison pipeline. Our good friend Janelle Wood has a lot to say about officers in schools and how it's actually damaging Black and brown students in impoverished communities by having police officers in schools. In fact, the outcomes that folks were hoping to achieve, the opposite has been achieved. And so, again, whereas schools normally would discipline children the way in a traditional sense, when there are police at schools, now disciplining children becomes a criminal act. And you see 6-year-olds getting arrested and having to, you know, go to court and that sort of thing. So this is why there has been a pushback to that. Rather, the liberals, the Democrats in this country, have pushed for gun reform, because there is a difference between a school shooting and a mass shooting somehow. And everyone likes to point everything at school shootings, completely ignoring that people shoot up parades and people shoot up grocery stores and people shoot up movie theaters and whatever else they can shoot up. And that we have a gun problem in this country. As I mentioned earlier in the show, this is the 130th mass shooting of the year. I didn't say school shooting, mass shooting. And just because I graduated high school doesn't mean I want to get shot. We have a gun problem. And so oftentimes it is, you know, the right facet of this country that's very much opposed to adopting progressive gun laws. They're very much Second Amendment purists, but they leave off the part of the Second Amendment that says that we should have a well-regulated militia. They don't like the well-regulated part, but they do like the right to bear arms part. And so when I say, or rather when this person says that the shooter did not act alone, was aided by the NRA and 49 Republican senators, that is the point that they were coming from.
Rams, how many arms?
Guns?
In this country? Like the right to bear, how many? I got two. Right? Like how many arms do we have the right to bear? Because the gun you bought in 1979 still works.
Yeah.
Right? So digging to get to the actual problem here, then you don't have to dig too deep. Yeah. Right? It's profit, like almost every other problem in this country.
Sure.
They sell it as protection. They use fear to churn up you needing to protect yourself more. Mm-hmm. So I know you got two guns already. I know you got one gun already that still works and will work forever. That's the really masterful thing about guns.
Very simple.
As a machine, as a mechanism, as long as it doesn't rust to decay, it'll work forever. So like the one you bought the last time you got scared, that's the one.
Oh, there's guns from the 1800s
that still shoot. They still shoot and will still kill. It's not like they you'll just be hobbling around. Like, no, those guns kill as effectively as the ones you can buy new today.
Yeah.
So it's not this need to protect your family, because a pistol will do that. Mm-hmm. An AR-15 was not designed for in-home invader family protection.
Yeah, it's a military. It's for war.
It is a, as Ramses calls it, killing machine designed for war. Yeah. You don't need one at the crib. You definitely don't need three or four. And you posing with your wife and your kids who also, okay, never mind. I don't want to pick on nobody.
Man, listen.
Well, we can move on.
And then I think you brought up the point that, actually, we'll get there. So, first question, what was the shooter's motive? I don't want to read the shooter's name. That's just, I just don't feel good about that. But I'm sure you know the shooter's name by now. Because I want to be very respectful of the trans community, I don't want to misgender this person, because I want to be respectful of properly gendering people. And I believe that this person used he, him pronouns. And so for the purposes of our conversation, we will describe this shooter as a he or a him. However, the news reports suggest that this was a genetic biological female that carried out the shooting. This person was a 28-year-old former student of the school. Nashville Police Chief John Drake said at a news conference, this would have been Tuesday, the shooter had left behind a manifesto, Drake said, which included a map of the school with details about how he would enter and carry out an attack. So the motive of this shooter, I cannot begin to imagine what would get a person to go that far. But I suspect that it might be a response to hate. Again, I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying that there might be something there. If this person is a transgender individual, been pushed to the edge because of recent events, you know, maybe there's something there. I don't know. Again, taking that out on children is perhaps the most heinous thing that a person can do. And innocent people, and, you know, we saw the janitor was a black man, and that felt unfair too. But if we're looking for a motive, maybe that's what it is. So that's one of the questions that, you know, we thought about. And this also, a lot of this reading and research came from NPR.org. I want to make sure I shout them out. Another question. Could police have confiscated the shooter's guns? And I think that this is kind of where you were with the statement you were making earlier. So I'll read this. In actuality, the shooter had legally purchased 7 firearms from 5 local gun stores. 3 of those weapons, including 2 assault-style firearms, were used in the shooting. The shooter was under a, quote, doctor's care for an emotional disorder, but law enforcement knew nothing about the treatment. And then it goes on to say, in some states, so-called red flag laws empower law enforcement to confiscate weapons due to mental illness or concerns from relatives. So could police have confiscated the shooter's guns?
If the Republicans in Tennessee hadn't voted against,
there you go,
laws that would have made that the case, yes, they could have.
You know, something I read, that you can't go to like a CVS and purchase like some sort of medicine and then go to another, like a Walgreens, and purchase more of the same medicine, and then go to another store and purchase same medicine, because it will throw up a red flag. Like, this is what people who are wanting to unalive themselves might do. They might get a bunch of pills because they can't get them all in the same place. So there's systems in place that prevent you from going to multiple locations and stocking up on whatever this medicine. And I don't know the details on how to do this, but I was reading this. And I was reading this, the person who had compiled this information was doing so in an attempt to suggest that it is possible to put together an alert system for people who are going from this store to the next store to the next store to buy guns, because it exists for this, whatever this medicine was. And, you know, I think that it's just a little sad that where we are with this is kind of where we started. That's the part that feels a little bit sad to me.
Yeah, more so, I mean, really more than a little sad, because I think we've talked about this before with some angst, right? Like the idea that there should be something that breaks capitalism's hold on us, like perhaps our children being murdered at school. Except, no. Like, in the name of profit, there's like no basement, there's no floor, there's no bottom for us. Like, yes, we could do all these things to make this less likely to happen, but then it'd be harder for us to make more money. So, no.
And, you know, I think the craziest part about this whole thing is that, I think you said this, you made this point before, that once Sandy Hook happened and we saw that children were on the menu and nobody was.
And I have to say this, white children.
Mm-hmm.
Once white children being murdered, I'm using that word very intentionally, very deliberately, because that's what it is. Not just children being murdered, because the country has shown us for a long time that if those children looked like Ramses and myself, no, they weren't really moved by it.
Yeah.
They actually use the way that our skin reacts to vitamin D and melanin as a reason why maybe we deserved to be shot down or killed. Or look what they do to each other. So why should we care?
Mm-hmm.
But once the other side showed us that even their children being murdered wouldn't sound an alarm and cause any type of change or reform, at that moment, to me, mentally, we're doomed.
Well,
because if not that, then what?
Man, we're in a bit of a situation here. All right. Now, again, I want to remind you, this is Civic Cypher. And all these things are connected, okay? We're going to do a little bit of a pivot here, because the next question that I want to ask is kind of important. Will the FBI or state agencies investigate this as a hate crime? Now, if you're like me, you're like, hate crime? Well, hate, you know what I mean? That's different. But let me read this to you. Police say that the suspect was previously a student of the Covenant School and targeted the building, which is also a church. On Tuesday, Senator Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, took that to mean the attack was targeted, that is, against Christians, and began calling for federal agencies to investigate the shooting as a hate crime. Hawley also introduced a Senate resolution to formally condemn the shooting as a hate crime. Hawley's choice in framing caught on quickly with other Republican leaders. Okay. So it's important to identify this tactic and to put an asterisk here, because this conceivably would give license to lawmakers to go after trans people. In other words, the connection that they're making is that trans people hate Christians, when in fact, it seems to be that Christians hate trans people.
You guys can't see me, but yes, reverse, you play Uno, the reverse card, that.
Yeah. So this is something that, of course, we can see because being Black and studying Black history in this country, this is a tactic. You know, you try to use whatever you can to make sure that you're the victim, make sure that they're the bullies, you know what I'm saying, and play with the optics. But, you know, I can't say what I can't say. I haven't read the manifesto. I don't know what I don't know, right? But that feels to me like a cheap shot for an already vulnerable community. And to take one individual, and I know that they were saying that there were other trans people that have done attacks like this, but the vast majority of people that do these attacks are white male incels. Let's be honest, the vast, huge majority. I think there was three people who were kind of in the non-binary space who might have carried out an attack. And of those three, I think maybe one of them only said that to get out of a hate crime charge, right? So with that said, for a person to, for whatever this guy, John Hawley, to take that and then try to use it to frame the conversation around trans people attacking Christians, it puts an already vulnerable population in a more vulnerable space and casts them in a more vulnerable light. And, you know, we always said that this show, we would use this platform to try to support anyone who was marginalized, born with a strike against them, had a tougher go at life. And I cannot sit here and pretend to know what it's like to be trans. I've met a handful of trans people in my life. I wish I knew more, just so that I could help more and articulate things a bit better. But as long as there's breath in my body, I have to push back against what I see as clear attacks on vulnerable communities. And that feels like one of them right now, based on what I know.
And you're being generous saying it feels like it, right? Because we can't use language that states things with 100% knowledge that we don't have actual knowledge of. Yeah. But there's a reason that it feels that way.
Yeah.
Because it most likely is.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to use terms like alleged and feels.
You got to talk around it. Yeah. A bit.
But it really, really sucks. It's such a cheap shot. It's such low hanging fruit. And they do that knowing how their colleagues will react to it.
Their constituents. Yeah. They're...
It's so cowardly and unfair, man.
Right. Now, again, I want to make sure that we are condemning clearly any sort of actions like this individual that shot this school up takes, while still recognizing that there are people in this community who need protection. And need a voice. And because, again, we have microphones and satellite dishes across the country and beating hearts and a degree of empathy, I think it's important for us to make sure that that's stated. All right. My final question that I'll ask: will lawmakers pass gun control measures? So finally, the question of the day and of yesterday and the day before that, unfortunately, it looks like it might be the question of tomorrow. Will lawmakers pass gun control measures?
It seems that even lawmakers themselves being targets didn't bring about change. There was a politician in Arizona years ago, at a grocery store or something.
Gabby Guilford, I want to say.
And like, even then it wasn't like, okay, this is gone far enough. Not just my children, but me. And the NRA, the gun lobby, those that profit from the selling of weapons in this country, they're too powerful. This isn't even something for us to go back and forth about. Mm. And not only are they too powerful, but those that benefit from their money like it too much, right? Because this wouldn't even be hard. The legislation that would change things actually overnight wouldn't even be difficult. There are cases, studies, and data from all over the world that show that more legislation that would require you to jump through more hoops, essentially, to get a weapon would make it so that less people who shouldn't have them would. And people always push back with the idea, well, if criminals want to get guns, they will. I'm sure. Right? But that's the same thing with everything. People who have no issue with breaking the law to get things, that break the law to get things, will continue to. We know that. Mm-hmm. We're talking about when they don't have to. Right? If you can get the money off my porch instead of breaking my window to get it, you'll just get it off the porch. That's human nature too. Yeah. And also the nature of the criminal, right? They will take the easier route when it's provided to them. And our country does a really good job of providing the way easier route. You can just go to the store and buy an assault rifle.
Or you can buy five of them in a row, not trip off any alerts or anything like that. So again, we wait and see. But shout out to the officers that got in there and got busy. Credit where it's due. All right. Okay, it's time for the Way Black History Fact. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by Underground Beach Club. From the streets to the beach, the finest in beachwear, visit undergroundbeachclub.com. All right, as promised, the former slave turned cop who made the only official arrest of a sitting U.S. president in history. I'll read. William West made the difficult call to hold the head of the United States responsible for dangerous behavior in a residential neighborhood. These days, American presidents and allegations of breaking the law are in the headlines nearly every day. However, in the nearly 250-year-old United States, there has only been one known instance of a sitting president being arrested. This was made by a police officer named William H. West, a former slave who took Ulysses S. Grant into custody in 1872 after catching the head of the nation speeding down a Washington, D.C. street on multiple occasions. West was born in 1842 in Maryland, where he and his family were held as slaves. When the Civil War, 1861 to 1865, came around, the young man enlisted in the Company K, 30th United States Colored Infantry, seeing action in the conflict that led to the abolition of slavery. During Reconstruction, which was 1865 to 1877, when former slave states were integrated in accordance with the federal expectations, West obtained a position as a policeman in Washington, D.C. in 1871. One of two black cops at the time, he gained a reputation for his gentlemanly behavior and affinity for good, fast horses. It was also during this time that he married. He and his wife, Kate, went on to raise six children. The arrest that West became known for was one that he made of President Grant in 1872. The policeman was following up on recent complaints of speeding horses by conducting a foot patrol around 13th Street. Suddenly, he noticed a horse and buggy traveling up the street towards him, and at what he considered a rate of speed that was unsafe for the residential neighborhood. Flagging the carriage down, he discovered that the driver was none other than the president, who he permitted to drive along after admonishing him to watch how fast he drove in the future. However, the next day, and in the same general location, West once again saw a number of carriages tearing down the street faster than they should be. He was able to flag down seven of them. Upon examining the drivers, he saw that one of them was again Grant, who was less than 24 hours from having received a warning. Because of the repeated transgression, West treated the situation just like he would if it were any other citizen. He placed the perpetrators under arrest, reportedly specifically telling Grant, quote, "I am very sorry, Mr. President, to have to do it, for you are the chief of the nation and I am nothing but a policeman, but duty is duty, sir, and I will have to place you under arrest." The president and the other six drivers were escorted to the local precinct where they were processed. Grant was released after paying a $20 bond that was forfeited, as he didn't show up at the hearing the following morning, thus resolving the matter for himself. It was reported that 32 women showed up to testify against the other drivers, who did have their day in court, who vehemently contested the charges in vain. Grant never did appeal his arrest or the fine that he paid. He even supposedly later acknowledged that he had been in the wrong and that West had done the right thing. However, it was far from a one-time incident. Records show that during his presidency, he received at least three different citations for traveling too fast in a carriage. Grant remained in office until 1877. He lived until 1885, but spent his final years battling cancer and racing to write his memoirs to help bring in some money for his family before he died, as he had bought them nearly to the brink of insolvency. Meanwhile, West completed a successful career as a policeman in 1901 when he retired after some 30 years on the job. In 1908, he was interviewed by a reporter who published a newspaper article that went viral and appeared in various publications around the country. The former cop went into detail about his most famous arrest. He described why he made the stop and arrest. Quote, "Several residents of the neighborhood had complained of horsemen who speeded their horse along 13th Street while driving to and from the Brightwood racetracks. President Ulysses S. Grant was one of the drivers who used 13th Street, and many a time he engaged in a speed contest with his friends. In fact, full spurts of speed were frequent occurrences, and the street was at times dangerous for women and children. Citizens complained time and again to the police about the conditions prevailing along the street on account of the furious racing going on, and orders were issued for the police to stop the racers." Unquote. Although the story of Grant's arrest was sometimes called anecdotal in the past, the Washington, D.C. Police Department has confirmed more recently that it did indeed happen. While it is remarkable for a number of reasons, it's also just a good example of a law enforcement matter being handled by the book, despite fame and power of the perpetrator. So, yeah. President got arrested. It's possible. Gives me hope.
Once upon a time, it was possible. I think all parties involved might be too scared for that to happen now, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a popular narrative refrain, maybe, that people keep saying over and over again. Who knows? But conservatives are saying that this is unprecedented. You know, we're referring to the investigations,
indictment
of Donald Trump, and the investigations and the potential indictments for him that are still lined up, and how everyone's calling it a witch hunt and saying that this has never been done before and it's unprecedented and that he's being targeted and this and that and the third, and trying to suggest that he is kind of beyond consequences because he has served as the president and now he's like a national treasure or something like that. Or because he did these things while he was in office, he's automatically exempt from prosecution or whatever fantasy arguments that these folks come up with. But I think the point that everyone is echoing on that side is that it's unprecedented. It hasn't happened before. And the fact is that we now see that it has happened before. And indeed, the arresting officer was a former slave. So that's some way Black history for you right there. So when I say, you know, it gives me hope.
That makes one of us.
Well, hope ain't nothing. So yeah, it's still a long ways away, but it has happened before, and I think that counts for something. So can't wait to see what happens with this indictment and whether or not it goes the way that we're hoping and that there's some accountability. I know that Georgia is looking like a juicy ripe peach right on the other side of it, one way or the other. So
I won't hold my breath.
True to form. But I'll have enough hope for both of us. How about that? All right. I think that's going to do it for us here on Civic Cypher. Once again, I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am still Q Ward.
And yeah, I think that's about it. Do us a favor. Hit the website. Submit any questions, any topics you want us to cover. Make a donation. The show is growing, and we will continue to grow with your support. You can also download this in any previous episode. And check out all our social media, including our YouTube. It's all at Civic Cypher. You can follow me at Ramses Ja.
Me at I am Q Ward. Hate, like, comment, subscribe, share, all that stuff.
But don't hate.
Hate, you know what I mean? We welcome it. Just do it on the platform.
And if you're going to hate, do it right. Make sure that we're having a constructive argument. Don't just throw no nonsense our way, man. We don't need none of that. We're trying to do something good here, right?
Yeah.
Until next week, y'all.
Peace.
Peace.
Hey, yo, we handle it. These brothers are fabulous. Yeah. Dilated, showing you where rhyme travel is. Worlds are spit tunes from sunlight to moon. Bussing off stage like gunfight saloons. Pull my mic back, you like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander slash beat expander. Here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show, get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines, wake up, refuse, and resist.